Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Bedad Jam Sheedy, the founder of CJAM, where he helps seven and eight figure companies find the right marketing partners without the usual guesswork, wasted spend, and false promises. Over the last 6 years, he has vetted more than 1,100 agencies, experts, and fractional CMOs, with only 11% making it into his trusted network. Through that process, he has helped generate more than 300 successful matches for growth-focused businesses. So I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and insights into cutting through the noise and finding partners who actually deliver. So thank you for joining us, Bedad. Sorry. How are you doing, my friend?
Good, how are you?
Good. What is that, anyways? The name. What is that?
Bedad is a Persian name. I go by B as a nickname. My
B.
parents are Persian. I was born in Canada.
Does it mean anything? Does it have, or is it like,
Bedad means sunrise, and then my brother's name is Bezad, and that means sunset. Oh,
hey, that's
yeah.
kind of cool. I love that. So that's perfect place to talk to start because you mentioned your parents. Is how did you even get into being an entrepreneur, marketing and sales and all that? Do you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Your parents seem like they were you know they're Persian, but you were born in Canada, so somebody ventured across the waters. Are they
They both ventured across the waters at the same time. I mean, it's kind of funny. My dad's being an immigrant, he worked from the ground up, right? He did construction and taxi driver, worked gas stations. And then I think when he had his second son, my brother, he's like, oh, I can't do this anymore. And so he went and got an accounting license, learned that, and then he built a solopreneur accounting business for the last 25 years. So entrepreneur in the family, I guess through not through choice, but through just needing to get things done and putting food on the table. That's what my dad did. Me growing up, though, it was all around security. So just doctor, lawyer, engineer. I chose the engineering path. And so I went down that path and I worked about 10 years in the industry, working for a company called TELUS. And I worked as a customer solutions engineer for about 7 out of the 10 years working for that company. So I got to work with like mid-sized businesses, 50 to 1,000 type employee range, understand like what's going on within the business, and then building out technology roadmaps. How do you get from A to B to C? And some of my customers were like the Lushes, the law firms, not-for-profits, manufacturing, multi-location senior homes. And that's where a lot of my business consulting, sales, leadership, and technology experience came from. And then it kind of advanced into the entrepreneurship path where a sushi lunch changed the entire route of where I went and got into marketing, building out websites, Google Ads, SEO, more on the side of work, and realized really quickly I hated doing 80-hour websites on the weekend. It wasn't very fun. So I started looking for marketing agencies to work with and pass work off to. And as I did that, I noticed most marketing agencies didn't understand business and most businesses didn't understand marketing. So there's always that gap. And so I had the idea 7 years ago of could I build out a network of people that I trust? I'll talk to businesses and matchmake them because most businesses really struggle to find great marketers.
Yeah, and there's a lot to it. I just had a conversation about this, that even if you find someone that is confident and capable, if the onboarding process is kind of janky, or if there's a not a handing over of knowledge, even if you've got great people, it can all turn to mashed potatoes. So I want to backtrack a little bit though. You said a sushi lunch changed everything. What do you mean by that? A sushi lunch? Like, was it bad food? And you're like, that's it. Now I got gout and I don't know what.
So there's another coworker of mine that used to work at TELUS as well. He's older than me by about 25 years or so. And we were out for lunch and he said, hey, I met this guy. He does SEO and he makes $50,000 a month passively. And I was like, hold on a second. Like, what is SEO? And how is this guy making $50,000 a month passively? Like, this makes no sense to me. That guy had a course. I was one of four people to buy this course. He built the course because he wanted to travel and do golf trips. And so, you know, you can do the course material anywhere in the world and write it off as a business expense. And so I was one of the four that took it. And I was also one of the four that actually did something with it. So I learned how to build websites, Google Ads, and SEO. That's where I learned it and realized the course just didn't have like enough details that I wanted. And the engineer in me was like, I want to learn more. And so I just kept learning how to build websites and buying books and courses, and now here we are.
Right. So wait, when you identified the gap, I mean, there's a pivot there because most people, they do something, they're bitten by a bug, they get passionate about it, and they're like, this is what I want to do. And you, it sounds like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're like, this is and super fascinating, interesting. I want to read all the books. I want to do everything I can to learn and master this. And now I want to completely stop doing it and let somebody else do it. That's what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, what got me interested in that sushi lunch conversation was that not that he's making $50,000 a month, but it was that he was doing it passively. That was the interest. And so I was like, oh, And I do the same thing. And once you get into it, you're like, oh, this is not passive at all. Building websites is not passive. Doing SEO is not passive.
What are you talking about? Yeah.
Right? Like, this is not it. And then I had someone that said, hey, if you send me business, I'll give you a percentage that I would have given my salespeople on my marketing agency front anyways. And I was like, oh, okay. This sounds more passive. Like, I can actually pass people off to the right people and let them do work. They benefit. I benefit. This works quite well. And so that's kind of why the transition was there, because I really enjoyed being a sales engineer. Like, there's no part of me that was like, I have to get out of corporate, or I had great managers. I had a great director. I had a great company that I was like really enjoying working for. And I got paid really, really well. Right. I was making, you know, mid six figures and doing quite well doing that.
Right.
Not mid six figures as in half a million. I meant mid six figures and like 150, 160 grand.
Yeah,
I kind of consider, you know, but that's more than enough to live really in Vancouver.
I mean, in Vancouver, right? These days, I don't know, but it's still, you know, you won't be on the streets.
No, you won't be on the streets. My wife's a lawyer too, right? Like, we both make really good income. So the goal was never just about money. It was like the passive income, getting time back and doing something that felt good. Like you want
really
customers and you want them to be happy.
Right. So you got this idea, you saw the aha, the skies opened up, the angels started singing, the pearly gates opened for you, money started raining from the sky, and now you make millions of dollars sitting on the beach and it's been sunshine and rainbows the whole way. Is that the story? Is that how it rolled out?
Yeah, you got it. I mean, that's it. That's how every business's story goes. No, obviously there's ups and downs, right? Like, it took me 3.5 years before I left my full-time job to run my business, right? So I was building my business on the side. People, you know, like, and I was doing that for solidly 3.5 years. I was working two basically full-time jobs. But as the business kept making money, I was actually taking the money in the business and hiring a designer, a social media poster. I started like building a team, because I was like, it doesn't make sense for me to live my six-figure job and just go run a business that's making 60 grand right now. I could rather take that 60 grand and invest it into a team and just kind of let that grow and see where it goes. Until about 3.5 years in, the business 10x between year three and year four. So I was making like 4 grand in the beginning of year three. And I was like, I don't know how much I want to do this. It's been 3 years. I'm getting tired. But that year, the business 10x. And I was like, wow, okay, crazy. Like, now the business is making more money than I am as an engineer. What happens if I put my full-time and attention into it? And so I did that about 3.5 years ago. I left the full-time gig, and CJAN's been consistently improving year over year, doing what it does.
I love this. I love this so much, because you, this is a Jim Rohn thing, you know, work, you know, most people are working full-time on their job and part-time on their fortune. But the idea is that, you know, I think I'm butchering this, but the idea is that you were working your job and building this, and you did two things. One, it forced you to build a team. So you had the business, it had to fund itself. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I think there's something there, because a lot of people are like, I'm going to start. In some ways, that disadvantage actually became a huge advantage for you. Why? Why am I saying this, B? Why am I saying this? You know, you get it, but for people listening, not everybody gets it. Why?
For me, it was, I wanted to build something profitably from the ground up, right? For me, it wasn't like I wanted to, like, I'm an engineer. I'm not a risk taker, right? Like, engineers by default, not risk takers. So for me, it was like, how do I build a business that if I put enough time and effort into it and build out the right systems and processes that it could grow? And it, once it has legs and I leave, I know I'm leaving because I'm getting a certain salary and the money has business into it. So the day that I left my full-time job, I had 107 in the business just in cash. And the business was already making 150 grand a year in profit. So for me, even though like I did take, like even for an engineer, even with that, it felt risky, right? Because I'm leaving a full-time job, leaving things, something that I've been around for 10 years. But the way that I did it that way, it reduced the amount of risk that I have. So I could actually run a business without having to be like, oh, if something happened in the next month, because then like when I left the full-time job, 3 months later, interest rates spiked, everyone's SBA loans went up, everyone's payments went up, what gets cut? Marketing, right? Like, I was able to weather that. Right? Like, whether that decline or that downfall, then it came back. And so I think if you're a business owner, there's a lot of people that say jump and build the parachute on the way down. I think that works for certain people. But for others that go, that doesn't seem like my style, there's a slower approach to doing it. And it's build out profitably, build out slowly, build out a team, and do it profit first, and don't take a risk of losing money. I don't like losing money.
I love that so much. So most time, if I try to ask people this, I don't usually ask this till later, but I'm just curious. So today, if you stepped away for 60 days, what breaks first?
I'm the person that does sales. So no sales calls would be done. My assistant takes care of things in terms of like email will tell me what's happening and what's not happening, but like no one's there to take the sales calls. And also I'm the person that connects businesses to the marketing agencies. I've talked to all the agencies. So there's a certain amount of knowledge in my brain that is hard to transfer into data for someone to come in and be able to do the matchmaking process and the sales process. That's something I can figure out down.
But you were doing the sales and the matchmaking even though you had your full-time job. Got it. So you're working two jobs essentially for a while there.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of
Got it.
work.
Got it. Got it. Got it. Yeah, okay. So now you've talked to so many different agencies and so many different businesses. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see them making?
Well, there's quite a few. Number one would be communication, like between businesses and agencies. That's number one. People just don't know how to talk to each other, don't know how to deal with conflict, don't know how to set expectations with one another. Even if you have the best agency, if you can't communicate with them as a business, it's going to fail. Right. Two is businesses don't spend enough time vetting marketing agencies. Like they'll talk, most people's process is they'll throw something up on a Facebook group or a mastermind. They get two or three referrals. They talk to the two or three referrals. One is hired, right? Like that's the process. But when you look at it, like I have to go through like 15 agencies before I find one that I like, right? So if you're just talking to three agencies before you hire one, you're already not, you need five times more agencies to talk to. Your volume is not enough. And then also most people are trying to find an agency that does everything. The number of LinkedIn posts that I've seen is like, we're looking at an agency that does websites and then paid ads and then performance marketing and creative. And I also need them to do my influencer marketing. It doesn't exist. Like in the mid-market and below, it does not exist. And at the enterprise level, you will pay a lot of money and then they'll go hire the people, their team that they need to fulfill on the thing. Like that's just how this works, this industry works.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Those are great. Where do you typically start with people when you're working with them?
Yeah, so whenever I'm working with someone, I need to understand the business first, right? So when I used to work for TELUS, I used to work with mid-sized companies. A lot of the work we do hour and a half long discovery calls, like just really understand the business inside and out, how they started, where they're at, the way that they make money, what kind of resources they have in-house, where they're trying to head, what their vision is. I need to understand that stuff first. And usually that's a 30-minute discovery call, sometimes up to an hour if the business is more complex. And then from there, I'll give an outline of like, okay, based on where you're at and what you're trying to do and what you have, this is how I'd approach it. Whether you need a fractional CMO to help you with strategy first, because you don't have that. You've been putting things, throwing things at a wall and things have stuck. But to get to the next level, you really need a strategy. Or it's, oh, okay, you have a lot of solid strategy. You just need the right execution partners. And here are the people that I would recommend for SEO or paid ads or influencer marketing or whatever it is. And if the business agrees with the way that I approach it, they'll hire me. I start making connections for them. They have conversations and then they hire who they want. And then I kind of sit in the background just listening in on, hey, every 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, like, how are things going? Are they going well? Do I need to shift anything? Do I need to bring something up to the CEO if something's not doing well?
Yeah, that's powerful. What are some of the most important skills and behaviors that you think the most successful people you work with have and develop?
Yeah. So I think on the business side, it's people that really have a solid business strategy and they know that they either have a solid marketing strategy or they know they need one, right? Like, and they're open-minded to like test because marketing takes a lot of testing, regardless of the channels you choose and what you're trying to do. The brands that do the best are the ones that really have their brand figured out. Like, look at all the big brands in the world. Which one doesn't have their brand figured out? They know their messaging. They know who they're targeting. They know who their customers are. They know the channels they're going to be using, right? Like that's the way they got huge on the marketing front, right? When it comes to agencies, it really depends on the agency if they really know what they're built for and they stay within their lanes. And then they have systems and processes and people who actually care, right? A lot of agencies, if they don't charge enough money, they can't bring in the talent they need to bring in, the A players that they need to bring in to take care of their customers. So if you're looking for a marketing agency and you're trying to penny pinch them, likelihood is they're going to be penny pinching their employees that are going to work on your account. And so it all plays to each other.
That's really sad. Where do you see how is technology enhancing or disrupting the industry? I mean, again, if you've helped do something like 300 placements, there's that's and you're following up, it sounds like, and I mean, that's a lot. You're seeing a lot of activity going around. So what's happening? There's a lot happening geopolitically. There's been a lot of disruptions since COVID. There's the, I forget what it was, they called it, but it was like the great whatever, like the great resignation or whatever. People were reevaluating their life choices. And now we've got kind of a new era and everything has kind of, in some sense, been reset. I went When ChatGPT was just announced, like a week, 2 weeks after it, I was at a conference. And when I left, across the hall was another conference, and it was an AI conference. And I'm like, was so shocked because ChatGPT had just been announced. And I went and I walked the vendor alley. I figured I didn't pay the fee to go into the sessions. I wasn't going to try. But I figured the vendors wouldn't care if I, you know, and I already had the next thing from the conference right there. So I went through the vendor alley. And there were banks and Google was there and all these, and everybody was talking about their new product coming, which is the old product, but with AI. Like, we're going to do this, but now we're going to do it with AI. And I remember walking through there going, this is a great reset to a certain extent, because all of their existing platforms are somewhat redundant now. Like, it's like someone hit the reset button, where now everything has to sort of, I'm putting a caveat here, but everything can and should have an AI element to it, either for security or in some way, shape, or form. And they may have an advantage in that they have customers and they maybe have a team of developers already, but it's like a new race. There's not the moat that everybody had before. And that's what I saw then. That was now a couple of years ago. What are you seeing now?
I mean, there's a lot of questions in there, but yeah, it comes down to like marketing agencies and technology and what people are using. Obviously AI is adding value, right? Like, so marketing agencies are able to do things way faster than before. Like, imagine what it took to do like a mood board and give it to a customer. It would take you 3 or 4 weeks to do something like that. But now it's like, oh, it takes 6 minutes to do 3 different mood boards. Customer, which one do you like the most? Oh, do you like this one? Cool. We're going to run with that. And we're actually now going to do it fully. Like, we're going to bring our creativity into it and build it out. That was not possible before, right? So you're able to move way faster on things like brand and that type of stuff. You look at the video section, like video production, like the things that people are able to create now without actually like having to get the actors and bringing them in and all that work, right? Obviously, different quality level, that's fine, but it's still pretty good. So instead of having to spend, you know, $200, $500 million on a really good commercial, like you could spend 30 or 40 grand. You can do some, I've seen some really interesting training being done, like where you make it creative and you got like a sheep that talks like a human and they're in the space and it's doing like HR training for employees internally. So there's a lot of things kind of happening on that back end, a lot of operational things that are becoming easier to do. And when it comes to like needing to look at a bunch of different dashboards and bring them into one, a lot of people have been doing that type of work. They're like, how do we take information from all of these different systems and put them into a dashboard that is custom built for me to look at? And people are building that with AI if they know how to do it, right? There's a lot of stuff that's happening on the technology front. Hard to keep track of. And it's also hard to keep track of what will stick.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Let's talk about that. What's the hype? Because I've taken a few stabs at hiring people and building things with AI. And my wife also has an agency and she works with clients. And this is old news now. This is maybe a couple years, a year or 2 years old. But she was working with a client that had a big meeting. And maybe it's a year old. And they had this big meeting. It was a rollout that they'd hire these 3 developers and they were building this thing. And she got off the meeting and went, Daryl, you built that a year and a half, 18 months ago. Like, what they're excited about their development, you and your team built that. And you found out that the technology's not quite there yet. So she, anyways, but so there is hype. What is the hype? What's real? What's hype?
I'm still kind of deciphering a lot of that. But I think one is like content, like people that are like, oh, I can just write quick emails now. And it's great. It's like, yeah, it's using like 25 different techniques interchangeably and not methodically to create an emotional response. Like, if you still have the top like 10% of copywriters, like AI is not beating that person.
Right.
You can give AI to that person, but it's not beating that person. So I think what's happening is like a lot of the baseline things, like for example, like a Wix website or a Squarespace website, like that level of website is moving up because you can get AI to build websites for you and AI to do copywriting for you. But I think that's just going to be the new baseline. So everyone's website's going to look exactly the same. It's going to sound exactly the same. And it's not going to be at the level that it needs to be. So I think it's raising the floor. But I still think at the top, you need really, really strong strategists. So whenever I hear someone saying like, oh, I built out an entire marketing arm with AI, my first thing goes, okay, well, how good is it? And is it going to affect your brand? Like, you got to be really, really careful on what's going on. And a lot of people right now are doing things like AEO and GEO and being like, oh, we're able to get like ranked in the chat GPT and we're able to get chat in Gemini by doing X and X. And I'm like, it's the same as SEO. Like the early days of SEO, things were really, really easy to do. And then all of a sudden, as it got better, it became a lot harder to do.
Yeah.
And so there's short-term wins that people are taking advantage of. I just don't know if they're going to last long-term. And there's no bad reason to like not try to get the short-term wins either.
Right. So what are you looking at in your crystal ball? Like if you've got a 3, 5 year, 10 year crystal ball, what are you got your fingers on the pulse on? right now that you think people should be aware of?
That's a great question. I think, I mean, I'm not thinking about 3 to 5 years out anymore. I just think human connection is going to be extremely important. That's kind of where my bets are on, is that as we move more and more into AI and people feel more and more disconnected, it's like human connection becomes even more important. That human connection, the voices, the thought leadership, like people are going to look for that more and more, because we're just going to become an echo chamber for everything else. So my whole thing around that is like telling people or teaching people how to build amplified relationships and how to build deep connection in less than 10 minutes. So my focus is still running my business and being the connector between marketing agencies and businesses, and maybe adding AI to that as well, like once the solid AI agencies kind of come out. But the other aspect of it is like, okay, how do we keep building deep human connection? Because that's going to become even more important.
I love that so much. And I'm so shocked. So when they used to have like all these social media scheduling tools, I want to say two things on this because I think it's really valuable. One is one of the number one features that I always looked for and used was wishing people happy birthday. So I would record a video with my now wife and our kids or dog every year, and we would set up these tools. Like people use, oh, I use social media to schedule post stuff. I would use it on LinkedIn and Facebook and them to send people a personalized happy birthday message. And nobody does that now. There's not like you can't do that anywhere. They got rid of that. And I'm like, why? Like, it's such a great and easy way to stay in touch with people. So I feel like that's something that what you said is so important. And that ties into the human connection. This I thought was interesting. And I don't know if anybody picked it up, but this is now a year, 2 years old. But there was recently a chess match that went viral. And it was like this two world champions and this guy lost. And it blew up all over the world, but we've got AI and computers that can dummy both these guys, no problem. Like it's not even a question, but we wanted the drama. We wanted the human versus human. And so I love what you're saying there because that's still going to be part of it. That's still going to be part of it, I think. I don't think that's going away. So I think that's really, really, really well said. I think that's really well said. I appreciate that.
I mean, I read a book recently on why the brain needs friends, and it's written by a neuroscientist, like literally talking about why human connection is so important and all the things that go on in your brain, and even down to like touch, my wife, for example, touching my arm. Like I have different sensors and receptors that actually connect to my brain, be like, my wife is touching my arm in this certain way, and it triggers all of the like the dopamine, the serotonin, and it's when you start learning about how the brain works, you go, oh, we can't just outsource this to machines. It doesn't work that way. All right. It's quite interesting when we start looking at stuff like that.
I love that. What do you think are some of the greatest challenges on the horizon that people have to are going to have to navigate? What are some of the things that you're see coming up?
I think it's going to be a balance between efficiency and operations to like brand and the connection piece, like even for businesses, right? Like how, like think about whenever you call in to get some help, how many times do you hate going through the IVR tree? Like you hate it. I just sit there and I'm just like tapping zeros.
Human,
I'm like
human,
human,
human.
right? And people are like, oh, AI is taking over and it's so great. It's like, no, like at some point people just want to talk to a human. So I think brands are going to have to really figure out like the how much AI to use versus how much human input to use and bring it all together, even down to like your newsletters, to your ads that you're running, to the videos you're running. I think there needs to be a balance. And I think one of the hardest things is going to be figuring out what that balance is for every type of business, right? Some businesses I think can use more of it, while others I think they have to use less of it. And I think a lot of people right now that are using AI are not realizing the brand hit that's hitting them right now by using those emails and getting those quick wins. And like in 2 years, they're gonna be like, why is no one reading my stuff anymore? Why do people feel so disconnected with my brand? I think this stuff is coming down the road. And because we're just so excited about this testing and offloading everything and being like, oh, we're so adaptive, I think at some point it's gonna hit and go, oh, we forgot what actually mattered.
Right.
That's kind of what I think
Oh,
about.
I think that's a really good. What does actually matter?
I think you'll need to know what your brand is, what your values are, what the messaging and what connected with you with your customers today is, and make sure that whatever you're doing is not jeopardizing that.
It's really interesting you bring that up because I don't know how you feel, but I feel like in a lot of ways, there's been a search for meaning and purpose in society lately where people are going profit for profit's sake is a false idol or a false god or a false goal. It's a booby prize. And I noticed that you brought that up. And I think that that's almost like a phase that we're in. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it in terms of it's like this war. I don't mean to get into it, but I have doubts that things are as they appear. Because if you have an extinction bomb and I have an extinction bomb, in my mind, I'm like, okay, you've got a loaded gun cocked and the barrel's against my brain, and I've got a gun loaded and cocked, and the barrel's against your brain, and we're gonna have a fist fight with the other hand. Like, what is this really? Like, really, what is going on here? That makes no sense to me. And I read a book, I forget what it was called, but it talked about how electrical circuits, economies work like electrical circuits. And it had analogies for different parts. You introduce friction here, there, that. And it also talked about how countries sometimes clear debt with death. If you think about, you send 30,000 people to their death, what happens to all their assets, all their bank accounts, all that stuff? A certain percentage of that is absorbed. I was in Vietnam during COVID, and Vietnam is about as socialist communist as they get. You've got mandatory military service. You've got CCTV cameras on all the street corners. You've got a military soldier on every busy intersection with a camera watching him watch you. And all the apartments and condos that we lived in while we were there for 2.5 years, we would have a CCTV camera in the living room above the door, the entrance to the unit. We actually decided we're always going to live in houses. We want to own and build houses. No more apartments and condos after that, because you're being watched. Where was I going with this? Oh, when the COVID did the shutdown, we were living in Da Nang, this beautiful little beach town. And there's like a Hilton, and there's all these 5-star resorts on the beachfront. And for a year and a half, they're all empty. And the government just went, thank you, and absorbed them all. And because it's so communist socialist, they start getting bought up by, it's like nepotism. It's like all the top elites now own these different hotels and properties that they just dried out the businesses until they foreclosed essentially and absorbed it all. So that's where I come back to, you know, like, what can you speak to that significance, purpose, and meaning? Like you say, you started talking about it a little bit, but you were talking about balancing the AI versus the human connection, you know, with the industries that you're working on. I guess my question is that, what do you see? What is the most value there? Do you have any guiding principles maybe to lead through that?
So the question I heard is like what's happening with the business is that some are focusing on just profit for profit's sake, and there's others that are doing it around some sort of purpose or meaning or something along those lines. And what does that look like? What does that shift look like?
Well, yeah, because we've got people got to pay the bills. So there's profit for profit's sake, but then there's people that are looking for significance and meaning. And that sparked because you were talking about, we have to find a balance between using AI for the sake of AI, but then you've got... Mm-hmm. These monopolies where people are like, just human, give me a human. And I guess that's kind of, you know, and then you talk about even the marketing. Like, I can make a video of a cat and a dog doing something funny, but at the end of the day, how do we navigate that? Like, what are you working on? Like, what are you telling people? You are straddled between the businesses that are trying to navigate the market in the future and stay in touch with the audience, and the marketing agencies that are trying to keep the clients happy and help them achieve that goal, but also adopt the technology. You get what I'm saying? Like, you're straddling both of those.
I think, so it just really ties down to the business goals and their strategy, like what they're trying to do, right? Like, so you'll have one business owner that goes, I'm building this business and I'm doing M&A and I want to build it to a certain point so I can sell, right? At that point, what's their focus? Their focus is typically going to be profit, and how can we increase EBITDA, and how do we add things into it, and how do we increase our multiplier so that we can sell? Like, that has a certain energy to running business. I'm not saying one is better than the other. It's just, that's the energy of that business, right? Versus you can have another business owner where they go, hey, I want to build a business that's purposeful and meaningful, and it helps this type of person because I know I want to help this type of problem, and I want to take care of my employees as I go through it. So they automatically know they're going to be a little bit less profitable of a business, but are they going to be dealing with less churn in their employee base? Probably. Are they going to have customers that like actually want to work with them longer potentially? Yes, right? Like, it's just a different type of business being ran. It just depends on what you want to run. And so there's no right or wrong. It's just knowing. I think the only time you become wrong is if you do it reactively versus actually thinking about proactively. What kind of businesses I'm building? What am I trying to do? And do I know what I'm going to align with value-wise to do that, right? And then build from there. And you have businesses of all types, right? Like, I know businesses sure. across all.
Oh, yeah. And everyone's trying stuff. I guess part of that also is what's happening with woke. Like, woke is, to a certain extent, has died off. The zeitgeist has sort of changed a little bit, the values. And you're also in Canada, where Alberta is on the verge of potentially voting on leaving Canada, and the West is separate. Like, what are the values and principles, I guess? You know what I'm saying? Like, what? I guess I'm trying to ask you, what are people talking about most? Like, where is this going? People are excited about AI, but they're nervous about jobs being replaced. You're talking to businesses that are trying to make it. I guess at the end of the day, I'm trying to say, what would you recommend to someone who's starting out or struggling? Maybe is a better way to frame it. They're entering this and they're going, hey, maybe I can't get B to help me find a company, but I have to navigate this marketing and I've got to get AI and I got to be profitable. But at the same time, I got to connect with people. What would you recommend to someone starting out struggling?
I mean, it just depends on what stage of business you're at. If you're starting out, then like, it doesn't make sense not to use AI, right? Because you're not going to have the resources to bring on every type of person that you want, right? So you can start off nimble, use AI, try to amplify people as much as possible, like get the most efficiency you can out of people as you're kind of growing. But as you get bigger, then you start asking those questions when you're like the 7 or 8 figure range of being like, okay, who are we? What are we doing? Who are we helping? What are our values? And how do we then do that? Where do we want to actually bring on resources to help us? And where can we actually offload something to AI where it helps us more operationally and might not be customer facing, right? Like, there's all this stuff that you can do, right? So like, for example, for my business like mine, I'm not going to be getting AI to doing my like customer connection calls and that kind of stuff. Like my whole business is around human connection, right? Mm-hmm. But where can it help? It could take something like a Fireflies meeting where I'm meeting someone for the first time, organize it in a way and create a description for me so that anytime in the future I want to make introductions to that person, I go, hey, AI, please make an intro to this person or this person. And it has a description out and it goes, these are why you two need to connect. I write, and then I do a little quick voice note with another AI thing and say, this is why I want you two to connect. And then I send that out. That's efficiencies for me because I make tens of hundreds of intros a week. So the more I can do that, the better it is off for me. But I'm finding the balance, right? I'm not going to be doing emails with AI. That's not going to work because I want to connect with people in the way that I want to connect with them. My voice is in there. There's also other models, right? Like people will use the 10-90, 10-80-10 model where they go 10% human input initially, 80% AI done, and then 10% at the end is human again, right? So you're bridging the two sides versus what I think a lot of people are doing are going AI first, and then I'm going to add the human aspect to it. But that takes out the whole creativity aspect, the whole thought leadership aspect. And so I don't really like that model that much because people will put something to AI and go, oh, this is good enough, but you have no idea what you would have created if you didn't use it, right? And so that's where people are, I think, are losing a lot of their thought leadership, their personality, because they think something sounds good enough. And that's exactly what it is. It's just good enough.
So let's talk about that, because it sounds like you're talking about what you mentioned before about amplified relationships. Can you speak to that a little bit? How do you see that working? So you kind of said the 10-80-10 model, but you gave a couple of good use cases for how you're trying to use it. You're using AI to support you in doing introductions, but you're still in the middle of it. You basically have AI. I used chess analogy before. Instead of you playing one game of chess at a time, you're now using AI so you can play 5-10 games of chess at a time in terms of introductions, but you're still determining which pieces move where.
Yeah, exactly. So the amplified relationship stuff is a bit different. It's just how to build deep connection in less than 10 minutes. And this is the whole model that I think people don't like networking, right? People want to connect. Like when you go to a networking event and you connect with people, you end up enjoying that networking event, right? Because at the fundamental level, people want to connect with other humans. And so my model has two main aspects, and then it has some things that go off of it. But to build deep connections in less than 10 minutes, it requires a couple things. One is you need to understand who you are. Once you understand who you are, you can understand other people better. That's kind of where the foundations of human connections start, is by knowing deeply, like, what are my values? What are my beliefs? What are the stories I'm telling myself? What am I put on this earth to do? And am I asking that question to figure that out? And then being able to share that with others vulnerably, right? When you're vulnerable with others and you share who you are, they're going to share with you who they are. And then once you're able to create, have a good understanding of self, you start attracting certain energy, right? Like you're going to know who to introduce me into, for example. Then it goes, how do you structure a conversation to go deeper, faster, right? And I believe that there's three levels of conversation. There's the high level conversation where it's like, where do you live? What's the weather like? That kind of stuff. The stuff that no one really wants to talk about, but it's a small talk they do. Once you get to a depth level two of conversation, this is when you start hitting people's like interest, what gets them excited, a little bit of their passion. And you can tell like that gets them excited to talk about. Depth level three is when you start hitting values, beliefs, life mission, the stories that kind of made us who we are. That's where I think the deepest relationships are built, are on self at the depth level three level. And so amplified relationships is all around one, understanding self, and then two, how to structure conversations so that you can go deeper, faster with people. And then I've created ways of like putting numbers to human relationships, which I can't explain now. I have a whole diagram and workshop I do around that.
Numbers also, to human relationships?
Yeah, adding numbers to human relationships. So it could be like you and your wife have an efficiency ratio of 84% based on the nodes that matter to you.
Mm. Right.
And I believe that humans are two nodes. There's a self node, which is your primary node. And then you have a secondary node, which are all your interests in life. It could be your business, it could be work, it could be sports, it could be whatever. And when you bring two humans together, all of these nodes kind of combine and interlock with one another. And so you can go, hey, based on the nodes that matter to my wife and me the most, we can actually create a numerical value on how efficient your relationship is there.
Ooh, that could be. Look at your little engineer coming out right here. I get this. I get this. I kind of bucketed what you said. Correct me if I'm wrong. I put kind of three buckets. I put knowing yourself, values, mission, like that part, because that's in some ways, that's part of what led me to go on this long tangent because you're talking, it's like execution is becoming easier and faster. So all of a sudden, we're deeper into the substrate, into the soil of like, why am I doing this? And who am I doing it for? And what does success look like? And like the deep thinking, feeling, soulful stuff. That's kind of what led me on some of these tangents I've been on today because you brought those up. But I've got your three buckets is knowing yourself, your values, your mission. And then I have this mastery bucket of just like excelling in what almost like discovering your ikigai, you know, your life and just focusing on that. And then the third bucket is about other people, interpersonal. Being social, empathy, staying in touch. Would you agree with that? Have I missed something here?
Yeah, I mean, you have the foundations of it all. It's how do you structure it, right? Like one is like, how do you structure and build a relationship in less than 10 minutes? Then it's like the amplified relationship piece where we start getting into the numbers. It's like, okay, how do you take that relationship you just built to going deeper and making more and more meaningful relationships to the point where it's like, we don't talk to each other, but whenever we talk to each other every 3 years, we just connect again, right? Like that's the kind of relationships you want to build. And then another aspect to all of this is like, how do you then apply energy to this network, right? Like I know thousands of people now. Who do I talk to? Who do I ping? Who do I stay connected with? And so there's a whole different like root and bloom model that I run where I kind of like segment people out based on where they fall within that root and bloom model. And it targets like how frequent I reach out to people, right? And how I reach out to them and how I stay connected with them. And so there's this whole like, this is like level one of just like how to build a relationship and a network. And then there's all this stuff underneath on like human connection that's like the art of it, like knowing when to reach out to someone, knowing when to give someone some space, knowing when and what to say certain things, or when someone says something to you and you go, for him to have said that, he must have done this, and therefore I can ask this question. Like there's so much like art to human connection, and that's the stuff that gets me excited to like deep dive deeper into, because once you can connect with another person, it comes back to that same thing where you said, why do businesses and agencies fail? Comes down to communication. And communication is just a form of connection.
Wow, you know, I see what you did there. You brought it full circle really nicely. That was good. That was good. That was like an expert move right there. I see it. Game recognizes game. Very well done. Very well done. I've got a couple pages of notes here. This has been deeply interesting. Can we talk about habits a little bit? What are the habits? I don't know. We talked about skills, behaviors. We've talked about, you know, hypotheses and approaches and methods, but what about habits? What are some of the habits that you think are mission critical for success in today's world? Again, you work with a lot of different businesses, some very successful, some not successful, same with agencies. What are the habits, daily, weekly, monthly, that matter most?
So the question becomes the habits that make someone successful in business or some of the habits that make someone successful in life and being happy.
Look at you, engineer. Is there a difference?
I think there is, because there's people that are like, I want to make the biggest business possible and I want to get to a certain level. And there is going to be like the habits are fundamentally the same for both sides, right? But there's a certain amount of energy that goes to certain habits. For example, there are people that are building really large businesses that will get up at 5 in the morning and get started and do all that stuff,
My
you
buddy
know?
calls this world eaters versus lotus eaters. You got the world eating people, they want to build the company that eats the world, and you got the lotus eaters that are like, I just want to have good work-life balance and you know, da da da.
I love your buddy's examples. Yeah. So if you're like a world leader, I mean, you're gonna be working pretty hard. I don't think there's work-life balance in that sense.
No.
You just have to try to optimize the best you possibly can of yourself, right?
So it's
Like,
maximum productivity per day.
exactly. Maximum productivity today. And you know that a part of that is going to be physical exercise. Some of it's going to be some mental work, whether it's with a business coach or a counselor or whatever it is. Anything that allows you to operate at the highest possible frequency, right? Like, I was just talking to a CEO buddy of mine yesterday where he's like, Yeah, we're both using this app called Othership, which is like a breathing exercise app, and you can literally choose upregulate, downregulate, and it's really cool because you can literally shift your entire state through breathing. And he goes, "Yeah, it took me about a month of doing an hour to an hour and a half a day till I got my nervous system to relax, and now I do it for about 5 to 15 minutes, and now I feel pretty balanced and pretty regulated." And I was like, "Isn't it crazy that we live in a world where we need to spend an hour to an hour and a half a day to downregulate our nervous system just so we can function in the North American society? And we need a counselor, and we need a business coach, and we need a massage therapist. We need everything to make this system work." Where it's like, oh, where the other type of lotus eater, I think it was what you were saying, is like that person who is more like myself, where it's like, how do I just find the balance? Like, I don't actually really care to like grind really, really hard anymore. Like I did, I'm running my business, I'm doing my best possible thing, doing the highest value activities I possibly can. But I'm also going to hit the gym. I'm also going to go travel with my wife and enjoy life because I don't know how old I'll live to. And I'm going to go see my parents and go for dinners and make memories because that's extremely important to me, man. I don't know if I turn 39 and someone says, "Beta, you got cancer." Dang. Okay. Business doesn't matter anymore. And the amount of money that I have doesn't matter anymore because I can't even spend it before I die. So I really like my viewpoint's a little bit different where I'm like, it's much more balanced. The habits I have are I go to the gym at least 2 or 3 times a week, eating as healthy as I possibly can. I have a private chef that comes cook for us, so I have a home cooked meal
That too.
at home.
Yeah, we get the chef. That's a people don't get it. That's a hack. Having someone come and meal prep for you is a hack. That is.
Massive. You buy 4 to 6 hours a week back in your day. And it doesn't like, I take that time sometimes just to go for a walk or go work at a coffee shop or even just play video games. Like, it doesn't have to be off all these efficiency. It could also be downtime, right? Like,
Well, it's preparation. The
just
will to
go.
win is the will to prepare. I want to read this because something you're talking about, I think, ties in all the stuff that we've been talking about. Because like I have kids and my parents are getting older. And they come visit me where I am, but it's not how many years do we have left, it's how many visits do we have left at this point, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not
Yeah.
like we got 25 visits, we got 10 visits, we got that was the last visit. Like we just don't know. You know, I always say not everything in the jungle kills you and eats you. Some things just feed on you as much as possible. And we notice
Yeah.
that in a lot of ways. We rage baiting on social media. People get that now, that the platforms used to incite rage and extreme emotions, and maybe they still do in a lot of cases because it keeps you engaged. The more engaged you are, they're showing you more ads, they're making more money. And so you have to realize that, oh, that's a parasite. Like my phone doesn't blink, it doesn't beep, it doesn't vibrate, it doesn't ding, it doesn't nothing because it's my tool to engage with the world. It's not a portal that anybody can jump into my life at any point in time and interrupt my focus, my time with my kids, any of that. And so personally, I want to read this kind of quote. It's about the master and the art of living, because I think it's, for me, it's a guiding principle to navigate what you just talked about. Because I see myself as a bit of a world eater. Like I want to be in peak mental and physical fitness, but at the same time, I got kids and, you know, da, da, da. So the master in the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mind and his body, his information and his recreation, his love and his religion. He hardly knows which is which. He simply pursues his vision of excellence at whatever he does, leaving others to decide whether he is working or playing. To him, he's always doing both. And that's James Michener. And I love that because I feel like that gets to the heart of it, where it kind of brings back what you're talking about before is the meaning and the purpose and the who and the people. Like I got to travel the world and I had an early retirement. But at some point, I was like, this is great, but I'm doing it alone. I got no one to share it with. My parents were just here for 7 weeks. And one of the best joys was to be able to fly them all over the Philippines and just see them playing with their grandkids, you know, and like taking photo, like the little photo I'm behind in the sunset. And my dad's holding my 14-month-old baby's hand. And that's what it's about. You know, if some people believe you die and you have an immortal soul that goes to heaven or hell. Some people believe in reincarnation, where you basically are living forever and you're just going to come back again and again and again until you have some eternal existence. Some people think with technology, we're about to have immortality through medicine and all this stuff. All three philosophies, no matter what you believe, have the idea of an immortal existence. And so I almost feel like the theme for this call is that if you believe you have an immortal existence, then what would be the trophies that you would collect and put over your fireplace? What would those be? What would you value on an immortal's timeline? Is it doom scrolling on Twitter? Is it catching up on 80 hours of the latest series? Or is it some of the deeper, more significant things, the people you helped, you know, the accomplishments that you achieved, the times that you drove through the dip to actually get to the other side and didn't overcome. Your scars are proof that you're hard to kill, you know, and that you're here because you have meaning and purpose. So I just love what we've talked about today. This has been a fantastic call. And I have a couple of pages of notes here. I do want to be respectful of your time. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
Nothing that comes to my brain, man. We went everywhere. We went from marketing to relationships, you know, life and purpose. I love that. And the quote I really resonate with, right? Like, if you want to get to this point where everything just kind of blends in, right? Like, if you don't, you'll get to a point where you sell a business and you go, what do I want to do next? And some of those people are some of the most giving people because they ended up making a ton of money, realizing money wasn't the goal, and go, okay, now how do I give back? Like, what do I want to give back to that actually matters? And yeah. So I think there's two ways of getting to that enlightenment, and either you sell a business, make a ton of money, and then figure it out then, or you do it as you're building. And as you're building, you make these little shifts and pivots in what you're doing until you get to a point where you're like, oh, cool. Like, I just talked to someone today. He's like, I'm like, so what are you building? He's like, listen, I already built a business. I just love doing what I do now. And I just want to work with the right customers. These are who they are. And I plan on doing this for a very long time.
Yeah.
I'm like, cool. Yeah. I like to meet people like you.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's so powerful. If people want to connect with you, if they want to carry on this conversation with you on their own, or if they got questions about how to find the right marketing agency for them, what are some of the best ways for them to get in touch?
Yeah, two places. One is obviously on LinkedIn. So Behrad Jamshidi, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm posting content there every day. And then my website is the other place. So www.cjammarketing.com. And if you go down to the resource section, there's a whole area of like questions to ask agencies and resources that are free. Feel free to grab them. And you can also contact me through the website and LinkedIn.
That's excellent. So go check them out on LinkedIn. It's Behrad, Behrad Jamshidi. So Jamshidi. And you can go check out his website, cjammarketing.com. Go check out cjammarketing.com. Look him up on LinkedIn. B, it was an honor and a pleasure to have you here. I truly value coming and sharing your knowledge and your experience and your time with my audience and I, knowing you've got your own direct reports, your own clients, your own community. Thank you for coming and sharing with all of us so we can all do better.
Amazing. Thanks for having me. And it was a great chat.